On this beautiful night, I haven't been out for a few hours. Very nice night. Good. Good, good. I think we'll have a great time tonight. It's a very different story than the last time I was up here. So let's start our night with prayer. Father, thank you for the opportunity to be in your word and be in a narrative that really gives us a great illustration of your power and your sovereignty. And Lord, I just pray that my examples and teaching would be clear and honoring to you, that everybody would be able to understand what it is that you have for us in this book of Ruth. And Lord, I pray that our time together in discussion would be lively, and it would be thought-provoking and encouraging to us as well, and also honoring to you and glorifying to you and allowing it to draw us closer to you. Lord, we give you this time in Jesus' name. Amen. Okay, like really? Last time I was up here, I was teaching about Samson and Delilah. Like, this is so much better. So much better. This is actually, like, I know everybody teases me about Hallmark movies, but this is actually like a Hallmark movie in the middle of Judges. Because remember, we're in the period of Judges, and there's chaos, there's bad things going on. And if you keep that frame of mind, or at least keep that in your mind, that this is a story in that era, it's kind of like this little, like, oh, it's a little bit of a respite from what is actually going on out there. And it is also gives us the ability to see that there are really, even in those times when things are bad, and chaotic and barbaric even, there were good things going on. There were good people that were doing good things and honoring God. There is still a very obvious theme. It will be throughout this book, and it is certainly in chapter 2 of this idea of the foreigner. So the writer makes it very obvious and points out several times that Ruth is a foreigner. She points it out herself as well. The other thing that we will review and talk about more is this Hesed type of love. Do you remember the Hesed? What were some of the examples that Eric gave? What stuck in your mind to help you remember what this Hesed type of love is? What?
All-encompassing.
Yeah, all-encompassing.
Steadfast.
Compassionate. Any other words come to mind? It's not actually a feeling, remember? It's not a feeling that we have. It's an action. It's what we do for. It's how we behave for the betterment of somebody else. John, I love John's definition of love and how we love someone well. We love someone because we want to see, you know, the betterment, the best for them. And so that's what this Hesed love is really talking about. The other thing is that we will see in this book that when there's not really any clear interaction that people are having with God, like in Judges we saw, you know, the Spirit of the Lord came upon somebody or the angel of the Lord and we heard him speaking, and we don't see that in Ruth, but we will be able to discern his presence. He is present in this book, and he is working through people. And so that's what I think chapter 2 is going to reveal for us. So we'll go in little chunks at a time. We'll read a few verses, and then we'll stop and talk about it. And then that's how we're going to go through chapter 2. So let's go chapter 2. If you're in the blue Bibles, it's on page 222. And we'll start with verses 1 and 2. Now Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth, the Moabite, said to Naomi, "Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after him in whose sight I shall find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." Okay, a couple of things here. Remember that Ruth is a Moabite, and she is in this land where people probably aren't real pleased to have her there. Naomi is an Israelite, and she brings Ruth with her. And Israelites, remember, were not supposed to marry outside of their group of people. And so Naomi's sons married these foreigners, these Moabite women, and now Naomi is bringing her back. And so these Israelites in Bethlehem, remember, they're in Bethlehem, they may not be real pleased to have Ruth there because she's a foreigner. It's also harvest time, so it's a really busy season. And this reminded me of years back, I bet 20 years ago, lived in Nisswa for like two-ish years. And back then, the bypass, like the two-lane thing past Nisswa wasn't there. There was a stoplight to go downtown Nisswa. Do you guys remember that? Mm-hmm. Well, when you lived in town, like downtown, like in town, that's how you got home. So when I would go home, I would stop at the stoplight on 371, turn right, and literally drove down Main Street in the summer with all the people. And I would often say things like, why don't you people just go home? Like, people live here. Like, I'm trying to get home. Could you walk faster? Could you find a sidewalk? Why doesn't Schaefer's have a lane for locals to check out a little bit faster? And so these were foreigners, and I wasn't very kind. I didn't think very highly of them. I loved that they brought money to our community, but they really impeded. They were in our restaurants. They were on our lakes. Think about some of the things you think about when you run across somebody on your lake that isn't following, like, the local unspoken rules. It's kind of annoying. And so I kind of laughed at myself. I'm like, oh, yes, I've been there. I have actually thought of the people coming up from the cities as foreigners and quite annoying. And now some of you, like my mom and dad, are actually residents. And some of my very close new friends are also residents as well. And they were weekend warriors too. So the writer introduces us to Boaz right at the beginning, and it was literally a spoiler alert for the spoiler for the people that were hearing this story. He actually said, "Oh, Boaz, this is who Boaz is." So if we can just for a minute pretend that we don't actually know who Boaz is, it's important for us to remember that. Well, let me tell you a little bit about Boaz, because this is probably why the writer wanted people to know who Boaz was right up front. He was kind of a big deal. There are Jewish pieces of literature, like the primary book that talks about the Jewish law. There's fables in it about Boaz. He was known as a patriarch, a really good guy. He was a widow, he had six children, and he had enough money to just throw these lavish weddings for these kids. So he was kind of a big deal. And so I think maybe that's why our writer wants us to know that this is actually Boaz, is kind of a big deal of who this is. But let's put that aside for a minute, because Ruth doesn't actually know who Boaz is yet, okay? And she's not going to know for a little while. But sometime, because of this introduction, when I first read it, I was like, oh, okay, Boaz, this is where she's going. But that's not actually how the story played out. So out of respect for Ruth, or out of respect for Naomi, because Naomi is now like the leader between the two of them, it's this family of two, she's the elder and she's the leader. So out of respect for Naomi, Ruth asks permission to go into a field. This is kind of a wild idea. And this gleaning, this idea of gleaning, this means going out into the fields. So if you think about like the cornfields that we have here, they harvest them, and then afterwards you see deer and Canadian geese everywhere. They're gleaning what was left from the harvest. So that's actually what Ruth was asking permission to do. And by law, she had the right to do it. So back then, the law stated that the remains after harvest were to be left behind for the poor, the foreigner, the orphan, and the widow. And so by law, she had a right to do this, but she still wanted to ask for permission because she recognized herself as a foreigner in this land. And so Naomi gave her permission. And Naomi's state of mind, we have to think about this for a minute. She's in a desperate spot because she came home. She's a widow. Her sons have died. She literally has no male figures in her family to take care of her or Ruth. So for her to allow this daughter-in-law, who's a foreigner, to go out into these fields by herself was actually potentially a dangerous thing. Remember, we're in the time of judges. It might not be real safe for her to go out there by herself. And so in an act of desperation, she's hit rock bottom. Naomi says, yes, you can go. And she calls her my daughter. So she is clearly identified as part of Naomi's family. So let's move on to verses 3-7. So she set out and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to a part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was the clan of Elimelech. And behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem, and he said to the reapers, "The Lord be with you." And they answered, "The Lord bless you." Then Boaz said to his young man, who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" And the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered, "She is the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab." She said, "Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves after the reapers." So she came, and she has continued from early morning until now, except for a short rest. Okay. Remember in the beginning of the chapter, Ruth does not know that this is Boaz, and she doesn't know that there's a relation to Naomi yet. So Ruth ends up in the field of Boaz. She doesn't realize it, but this is a big deal. It's significant, and it'll be revealed a little bit later. But this is where we start to see this suggestion that God's sovereignty is still at play. Even though in the book of Ruth, we don't see these interactions that people are having directly with God, this is an opportunity for us to see that God is still at work and his hand is at play here. In verse 4, Boaz greets the people working in his fields. And this is a greeting that is part of that hesed. He cares for his people. This is a really great employer-employee relationship. And that's what this greeting indicates. And Boaz is not necessarily in the field every day, so he isn't there seeing the day-to-day work that is going on in his fields. But he knows enough of who should be in his fields to know that there is somebody in his field that he has not seen before and maybe doesn't belong, and so he asks who she is. And it's another interesting thing that Ruth does is that she carries herself so respectfully. Not only did she ask Naomi for permission to go in the field, she asked Boaz's foreman in the field for permission to go in the field. So she's not making any assumptions about what she has the right to, but she is wanting to make sure that she is accepted and that she has permission before she goes ahead. All right, let's move on to 8. We'll go 8-12. Then Boaz said to Ruth, "Now listen, my daughter. Do not glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women. Let your eyes be on the field, that they are reaping, and go after them. Have I not charged the men not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young man have drawn." Then she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner?" But Boaz answered her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me, and how you left your father and mother and your native land and came to the people that you did not know before. The Lord repay you for what you have done, and the full reward be given to you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Boaz makes it clear to Ruth that she's done wandering. She doesn't have to worry about wandering anymore and finding a place for herself. He gives her very clear communication and instruction and shows her his willingness to protect her and take care of her and Naomi and make sure that they have what they need. To shepherd Ruth, who is a foreigner in that land, into the fold of his own servants was a big deal because it wasn't a popular thing to do. He may have been going against the grain of society at that time. Even though the law stated that what she was asking to do was permissible and lawfully her right to do, remember, we're in Judges. People were lawless. They weren't necessarily following what God had asked them to do. So the fact that he did this allowed a foreigner to be among his girls in his field was an act of courage on his part, and it showed more of that hesed love, that hesed that God asks of us. When I was preparing and praying about this text and asking God to reveal to me exactly what it was that we needed to hear and pull out, I thought about how gracious I am. Am I that gracious? Are we that gracious? Are we willing to step out of what maybe society has created as a norm for us, to go out of our way to be exceptionally loving towards somebody? And so that has sat with me all week long, and it keeps coming in my head. Are you that gracious? Are you that gracious? Are we that gracious? Does our society allow us to be that gracious without some type of something coming back at us? Like, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? She does not deserve that. So remember what is happening around them. It's lawless, there's brutality, women are not treated well. This act of grace is actually an example of the grace that God displays for us and also the Israelites during the entire book of Judges. How many times did we hear, and they did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, but then God came back and provided for them another way. And so that graciousness that God had for them, that graciousness that Boaz has for Ruth and Naomi, I think that we need to be very cognizant of that and attach that to that hesed type of love that we're talking about in this book. This is what I love about the book of Ruth. The placement of this narrative is such a glimpse of hope. And I know that people make fun of me all the time about Hallmark movies. But up to this point, who watches Hallmark movies? Mm-hmm. Hey, three men, more men than women raise their hands and are watching Hallmark movies. Ah, I feel redeemed. I love it. Lee, could you write all their names down? Just kidding. I'm just kidding. I will not reveal you. So one of the reasons that I enjoy Hallmark movies is because I feel like there's so much coming at us that allows us to get angry and worked up. And there's this time that I can just sit down and I know that 2 minutes before the end, it will be a happy ending they're going to kiss, and I might cry, and it will be a really feel good. And so it kind of related to this. Like in the middle of Judges, this era, we get to read this story of Ruth, and it's like a little Hallmark movie. It's going to change in the next few chapters because there's some things that happen that don't actually happen in Hallmark movies, but I'll let Eric deal with that. Good timing, right? I feel like I've dealt with a lot of controversial things in our text. So Ruth knows that she doesn't deserve the favor that Boaz is giving her because she's a foreigner, and she knows she should actually be forced to live on the outskirts, the fringes of society. But Boaz actually did his homework. He knew exactly who she was. He knew the exact circumstances in which she was there. And he knew the sacrifice that she had made for Naomi. She left her own family because she was committed to taking care of Naomi because Naomi had nobody else. That's Hesed love too. It was an action. She was taking care. She wanted the betterment of Naomi. So that is another example of that Hesed type of love. Boaz is demonstrating in this section a broader view of community. So if you think about what families are and what family Naomi and Ruth had under this, all of the circumstances, what happened is that their family crumbled and it got this big. And now Naomi's family includes a foreigner, and she clearly accepts her because she calls her my daughter. And now Boaz is accepting her. So his view of community has broadened beyond the familial lines. So he's accepting her. He is broadening the view of community. Boaz wants Ruth to understand that God, capital G, God of Israel, in her bravery and maybe in her ignorance in following him, we don't really know how much she knew about God. We know that she married Israelites, but we don't know, it doesn't really tell us about her faith in God. We just know she's a Moabite, so she probably is not a follower of Yahweh. But he wants her to understand that her allegiance to God is much different than anything that she would know from the gods of her past. Small g, gods. They're very different. Yahweh's wings provide refuge. That's what this last verse that we read says. And Boaz does more than just talk about God's refuge and talk about who God is. He actually becomes that protector, that refuge for Ruth. Again, Hesed, worried about the protection, the betterment of somebody else. Let's move on. Verses 13 through 19. Then she said, I have found favor in your eyes, my lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, though I am not one of your servants. And at mealtime, Boaz said to her, come here, eat some bread, and dip your morsel in the wine. So she sat beside the reapers, and he passed her the roasted grain. She ate until she was satisfied, and she had some left over. When she rose to glean, Boaz instructed his young men, saying, let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not reproach her. And also, pull out some of the bundles for her, and leave it for her to glean, and do not rebuke her. So she gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. And she took it up and went into the city. Her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. She also brought out and gave her the food she had left over after being satisfied. And her mother-in-law said to her, where did you glean today, and where have you worked? "Blessed be the man who took notice of you." So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, "The man's name with whom I work today is Boaz." Still, Ruth does not have a clear understanding of who Boaz is, but now Naomi is going to. Here Boaz continues with this grace and protection. He instructs Ruth to eat with his people, and he didn't have to do that. And he wants to treat her as one of them. He's actually trying to show her that Bethlehem community. Come and eat with us. You're one of us. He gives very clear instructions to his men in regard to how they are to treat her. Because of her status as a foreigner, Boaz has showed some concern for her safety. And he recognizes, because it is in the period of Judges, there is a potential of abuse towards Ruth, and he wants to protect her from any mistreatment. He wants no harm to come her way. Hesed, that protection. And when Ruth went into the field, she was able to glean a lot of grain. An ephah of grain is probably around 27 pounds. So she came home with 27 pounds. I mean, right? That's like half of one of those big 50-pound bags of flour you get at Costco. Is that 50 pounds at Costco? Right? I don't buy them because I can't lift them into my cart or out. That's a lot of grain. And then she brings what she did not eat at the table. And so she is really, Naomi is overwhelmed with this generosity. How can this be? In verse 19, Naomi concluded that the amount could have only happened if the farmer showed extraordinary kindness to her. Extraordinary, out of the ordinary kindness to her. And such a man certainly deserved to be blessed. And she responded with this blessing. Verse 20. And Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "May he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead." Naomi said to her, "The man is a close relative of ours, one of our redeemers." So in this, Naomi realizes it was Boaz, or she's told it's Boaz, and her reaction with this blessing is not just a recognition for how gracious and how generous he was to her, but it's also a reflection. Remember back in chapter 1, she felt that God had deserted her. Yahweh had deserted her. She was a widow. Her sons had died. She didn't even want people to call her Naomi. Do you recall that? So now she's realizing, oh, actually, that is not true. God did not forsake me. He did not leave me. She has realized now that he was there all along. And sometimes we do this, right? We have to look back in order to see where God has been at work. We aren't always very clear about it in the morning, or in the moment, or in the morning. I'm not clear in the morning. So sometimes we do have to look back. So the example that I shared this afternoon, how I got to Timberwood Church, my job that I loved, I was literally paid to tell people what to do. It was a dream job, I thought. But it was going to come to an end. They were going to cut my position because of federal funding, and so I was out of a job. And I thought about some of the options that I had. I could go and be a superintendent, and that would add a whole new level of stress. At the time, I had a 5-year-old, a 6-year-old, an 8-year-old, and a 10-year-old. So I'm thinking, superintendent, I can do that. It'll keep me close to home, potentially, but the stress level is high. Or I could continue with this consulting type of role that I have, but then I would travel more, and I would be gone more. And so neither one of them seemed like a really great fit, but that was the path that I was going down until John invited me to have coffee one morning. And so in the moment, I did not necessarily see what was going on. But for me, looking back, oh, could that have been part of what helped me to get here? Potentially. You'll have a great discussion, hopefully, in your group about coincidence versus God's hand in things. So sometimes you'll hear people say, there's no such thing as a coincidence. But we talked about today, what if Mary Lou chose to go have coffee at Stonehouse tomorrow morning, and I chose to go to Stonehouse tomorrow morning, and we struck up a conversation, and Mary Lou says to me something that my soul needed to hear, and I walk away. Was that God's sovereignty and provision and directing us to Stonehouse? Or was it, I made a great decision that morning, and so did Mary Lou? So that will be part of the conversation that you guys have in your groups. So was it God who placed Ruth in that field? Or did she just happen upon? I think this is an opportunity for us to see God's involvement. He doesn't leave his people. He didn't leave his family. He didn't leave his people. He didn't even leave the small family of two women, two widows, one a foreigner. Do you have a question, Russ? Or a comment?
37.5%.
What?
37.5%.
Oh, of the time. You're smart. There's a backstory to that. So how often is it that this is God, and how often is it that this is coincidence? He said 37.5%. Because a few weeks ago, he emailed me, and he says, I've been pondering about how much control God has in our lives, and what percentage of our life does he actually control? And he goes on, and he talks about some aerospace things, and right? And so I pondered it a little while, and I thought of my response to him, and I started my response 36.5% of the time. That's what percentage of God controlling our life is. That was brilliant. It was hilarious. I thought I was being very clever. So did you, Russ, didn't you? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So 37.5% of the time, it's coincidence or God. Just kidding. Val? Correct.
But a former came back to your family, so does the premise of taking care of family override not marrying?
Yeah, good question. So what Val said is Israelites are not to marry outside of Israelites, but they did. And so now this Moabite is a widow in this family of Israelites. And so now bringing her back into Bethlehem and her being taken care of, does that need or does that, is there a call to care for her that supersedes the command to not marry outside of their group? Great question. I don't think I have an answer. Yeah, I don't think I have an answer. It seems that way. It seems that way for Boaz, doesn't it? Yeah. And maybe it's unpopular with the community, you know, but it seems to be what Boaz is called to do, drawn to do, led to do. And so this idea of a guardian redeemer, she says kinsman redeemer. Another one of our commentaries said guardian redeemer. A guardian redeemer would be a close family member who had the responsibility to buy back land that had been lost in order to keep it in the family. And so by extension, what is going on is that it came to be an understanding that those who ought to be taken responsibility for would care for their needy relatives. Does that help? Okay. So personally, I was reading through this and chatting with Steve, and I said, hey, Steve, we're actually like Guardian Redeemer preppers. We're preparing for guardianship because we bought land from my mom and dad and built a house right next door. So we're preparing to be guardians and care for my mom and dad as they age and are unable to, because we want them to be able to stay in their home and in their community as long as they can. So I'm like, maybe we're like Guardian Redeemer preppers. We're just in the early stage of it. Just kidding. Another interesting point that needs to be brought to our attention in verse 20. I'm going to read it again. And Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, may he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead. Naomi also said to her, the man is a close relative of ours, one of our redeemers. She used the word our. So again, this is a clear indication that Ruth is included into this family. She didn't say my family, she said our family. And so there's that inclusion of a foreigner, somebody who should not be part of that family, being included into that family. So let's finish up verses 21 through 23. And Ruth the Moabite said, besides, he said to me, you shall keep close to my young men until they have finished all of my harvest. And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it is good, my daughter, that you go out with the young woman, lest in another field you be assaulted. So she kept close to the young women of Boaz, gleaning until the end of barley and wheat harvest, and she lived with her mother-in-law. I feel like the end, but it's not. So Boaz Hesed, his commitment to care for these widows was not short-term either. It wasn't like come and glean for a day or two. He invited her to glean through two harvest seasons, barley and wheat. And so he was committed. He went above and beyond what he really probably by law was needed to do if he was going to be law-abiding. So this continues. This is another example of his hesed. Ruth, for me, is kind of like this love story that God wants to reveal to us, and how people can love one another like God loves us, and this is what he wants us to do, and Boaz is an example of that. We will see this guardian redeemer that Boaz is, this view of him play out later, and I think it will be really interesting to watch it play out, because ultimately, him being a guardian redeemer plays a significant role in Jesus. Shocking. The Old Testament pointing to our Redeemer, Jesus. It happens a lot, and this is another example. So this is an example of when, after you are reading through the entire book of Ruth, you look back and you can say, oh, that's how that was working all the way through. Because without Boaz, there wouldn't be a Jesus. And that will come later in the story. The book of Ruth really reveals this concept of God's blessing and how he actually blesses other people through us. Sometimes we think of, or I will say to people, remember, Christ in you, Christ through you. And so in this instance, this is Boaz. Like, Boaz is a follower of Yahweh. And Boaz understands what Yahweh's love looks like, what that hesed love looks like, and he's going to give that too. And so that's what chapter 2 is revealing for us. Remember that hesed is mercy, it's compassion, it's love, it's grace. It's not just a feeling. but it's an action on behalf of someone else. And we might sacrifice something of our own in order to better or make things better for that person. Hesed describes a sense of love and loyalty. These are words that would describe God's love for us. Compassionate behavior towards other people. The Hesed that we see in chapter 2 is actually, there's two different things that we can connect that to. Ruth is doing Hesed to Naomi, and Boaz is doing Hesed to Ruth. Ruth is very concerned about Naomi's well-being, and she's willing to go out into a field that could potentially be dangerous to her because it's so important for her to take care of her widowed mother-in-law that she will put her safety on the line in order to make sure that her mother-in-law is cared for. And likewise, Boaz is willing to go above and beyond, not just this day glean through both of these harvests. Don't eat out there, eat with my people. I have told my men to not rebuke you. Do not bother her. These are both examples of that Hesed love. This requires initiative. Ruth did not wait for God to say, get up, Ruth, and go glean. Take care of your mother-in-law. She took some initiative. And so initiative is part of that. We don't have to wait for God to bonk us over the head to get us to move to do the right thing on behalf of somebody else. Or we shouldn't. We don't have to, and we shouldn't. Sometimes we just have to make the first move, right? Take a chance, take that step out there. It's kind of like volunteering. For years, invitations to serve in some capacity. And oftentimes people will say, I don't know, let me pray about that. And then I will follow up with them. And many people have said, you know, I just really don't hear God pointing me in any particular direction. And I'm like, then pick one. Like, start somewhere, take the first step. Try this, if that doesn't feel right, try this. Because without a doubt, God calls us to serve, right? So take that initiative, take the first step. Don't wait, we don't have to wait for God to knock us over the head. I used to talk about it like, I just want God to leave a yellow post-it note with Sharpie marker on my front door. Just tell me, I'll be obedient. Just tell me what to do. It doesn't work that way. That would be like bonking me over the head. And it's hard work and it takes risk. Ruth worked hard in those fields, and she took the risk putting herself in the field to begin with. And so this text, for me, and hopefully for you, really draws you into this idea of God's Hesed love and his Hesed love for all people, not just the Israelites, but the foreigners. And then in turn, Boaz, understanding, it seems pretty well, what this means and what he's called to do, and in turn does that. So when people come and bump up against us, do they experience God's Hesed type of love? Do they experience his graciousness? Do they experience his compassion? Do they experience his welcoming, embracing? What do people bump up against when they bump up against us? Does it reflect God's love? Or does it reflect the world? Does it reflect our crabby day or our bad day? How can we give this Hesed type of love in our everyday, at home, with our spouses, with our kids, at the workplace, with employees or employers, bosses, at school, teachers, students, in the community, in our neighborhoods, even to the neighbor who never waves when I wave? What does that look like? How does this look like in our community, in our families, in our communities, in our state, in our country, in this world? What does this look like? What should this look like? Lots of great material for discussion in your groups, right? All right, so we'll be back here at 7:55. Sound great? Okay, see you then.